In the 1 year since U.S. troops pulled out of Afghanistan, the United States took in some 76,000 Afghan refugees. So, how are they faring in this country? We have two conversations. First, the humanitarian group, the International Rescue Committee. The IRC is helping thousands of refugees resettled, and we have the group's J.C. Hendrickson on the line. He is senior director at the IRC. J.C., welcome.
Thanks for having me.
So your organization, the IRC, helped around 11,000 refugees find homes. I understand a little more than half of them were men, about 1,400 unaccompanied minors. What have been their biggest challenges?
Well, the challenges are significant, and we're talking about things like housing and employment. But in just over a year now, there's been enormous progress as well. Today, tracking that within their first year of employment, Afghans are set to contribute $1.4 billion to the U.S. economy and nearly $200 million in taxes. So we know that refugees bring more than they carry, and we know that these contributions far outweigh, you know, the challenges that we've had in the first year.
About half of the Afghan refugees are now working and, as you say, paying taxes. What kinds of jobs are they working?
Well, the top sectors are accommodation and food services, retail trade, manufacturing, transportation and warehousing, some food manufacturing. But there's also a significant amount of people who work in the high-skill sector. So the types of jobs really run the gamut.
And I want to get back to housing. We have read about housing challenges. When these refugees first came, the U.S. government provided some level of money for housing, but in many cases, has that long run out?
Yes. So the government helps people when they first come to the U.S. with a small amount of cash assistance so that they can get up on their feet. But that money typically runs out after 3 months or so. But what we find is that people are typically able to find a permanent place to stay. And they do that with the help of resettlement agencies like ours and the others who work with refugees.
Mm-hmm. Now, I understand for these refugees, their status is what's called humanitarian parole, which gives them 2 years to find stability, to figure things out in this country. So one of those years has already passed. What options then do refugees have if they want to stay beyond the 2 years?
That's right. And you know, this is really critical at this point. So right now, refugees have the ability to apply for temporary protected status, which after that 2 years would give them another 18 months to stay in the U.S. But that's, you know, that's a Band-Aid. That's not a permanent solution. And their only other option is to apply for asylum, which, as you may know, is a system that is plagued with backlogs and delays. So what we're pushing for right now is for Congress to pass what's called the Afghan Adjustment Act. And what that would do would provide a pathway for Afghans to apply for permanent residency in the U.S., a quicker way than waiting, you know, in line for asylum, but would still require an application and background checks and all of those things.
Of course, many of these refugees in the U.S. still have family members in Afghanistan. How is that going as far as efforts to bring family members over?
Well, it's really hard. I mean, there are efforts for family reunification, but you know, people are worried. They're worried about their loved ones who are still in Afghanistan that might be in harm's way, and they're worried about when they'll be able to see them again. But you know, as I mentioned earlier about this Afghan Adjustment Act, on top of worrying about family members whose safety may be at risk, and all the other challenges we talked about, being afraid that you might have to return to Afghanistan yourself is just, you know, another compounding factor that is really not necessary, and it's cruel. We made some commitments there as a country to bring people to safety. Mm. Why that shouldn't be a permanent solution is beyond me.
And I imagine from time to time you are interacting directly with some of these refugees in the U.S. Do you have a story that puts a face to the challenges here that you really remember because it puts a face on it for you?
Yeah, I mean, I've met some people that have come over, and the thing that struck me was how many children are a part of the Operation Allies Welcome, you know, a group of 76,000 people. Some of them were able to come with a parent or both parents if they were lucky, but some, you know, were not and had to come either with a friend or on their own. And it was really, you know, heart-wrenching to visit with some of these young kids and, you know, see, you know, children wearing the same Spider-Man t-shirt that my five-year-old wears, but, you know, have been through a truly horrific situation. So it's just really important that we do right here, and that we tell the people that we made commitments to that you can not only come to the U.S., you know, in search of safety, but you can stay.
That's J.C. Hendrickson, Senior Director at the International Rescue Committee, the IRC. J.C., thank you so much for the time.
Thank you.
Now let's hear the story of one Afghan refugee. Zamsama Safi is 25. She's from Jalalabad, and she left her homeland on August 15th of last year on one of the last commercial flights out of the country. When she was 15, Zamsama and her younger brother were kidnapped by the Taliban. She says they tortured and sexually assaulted her for days and released her only after they made her swear to return to them to marry a Taliban commander. But she didn't go back. Instead, she began working as an interpreter for the U.S. military, and today she lives with a host family in Missouri on a special immigrant visa. Zamsama Safi, welcome back to Here and Now.
Thank you so much. It's my pleasure.
We spoke with you last August, shortly after you had arrived here in the U.S. So how has the past year been?
It's been a wonderful year for me, and this is the year that I proved the world that I have reason to be in it. And I proved bad people, they're wrong. And I proved that a woman can be anything. Women can have freedom. Women can be a teacher. Women can be a very good advocate for other women. Women can be educated, and women can be independent.
How did you prove that?
I proved that because I struggled 10 years for my freedom and education in Afghanistan. I never gives up in my life. And when I got here, I made it here. It was a very huge achievement for my life. And I wrote a book in the United States. I'm going to school. I am improving my English, and I submit my application to the University of Missouri to get my master's degree. And I want to be a very good advocate for other women in Afghanistan, for those women who are suffering. I can feel them. I can feel their pain. I can feel their stress.
What is it like, though, to be succeeding in this way, be accomplishing so much, and congratulations on the book, and to be, you know, pursuing a master's degree while you see educational opportunities vanishing for the women who are still, and young women who are still in Afghanistan?
Those women and those young women, educated women that they are still in Afghanistan, the world shouldn't forget about those women, because those women have highly hope for their future, for their careers. They want to be free. They want to be educated. They want to be independent. But right now, everything is gone. And the Taliban, they lost their credibility as they promised that they will not close the school doors in front of women. But they did. They don't let the women to go to school. They don't let the women to work. They don't let the women to achieve their goals.
You went through a lot. As we said earlier, you were kidnapped by the Taliban at age 15. They released you under the condition that you had to return to them and marry one of them. But you managed not to do that because you got help from a U.S. officer, right?
Yes. Lieutenant Colonel Aaron Thomas, he really supported me so much since 10 years because he was the first person who rescued me from the Taliban and hired me as a translator to live on the base with the American troops.
So you said that he rescued you from the Taliban. What do you mean there? What had happened?
When I escaped from the Taliban after 4 days, Lieutenant Colonel Aaron Thomas, he was there and he investigated my case and he hired me as a translator there because my life was, my life became very dangerous in Afghanistan as I didn't go back to the Taliban and I didn't get married with them and I didn't have the same ideology as the Taliban and I wanted to be educated woman and I wanted to be independent woman. And Colonel Thomas, he supported me for my dreams.
So you became a translator and that led to a serviceman helping you come to the U.S. And you're now, your host family is another soldier. You're in St. Peter's, Missouri, just outside of St. Louis.
Yes.
I cannot even imagine what this adjustment has been like for you. But maybe you can help me understand, what has it been like going from all that you just talked about to St. Louis, Missouri? What are some of the biggest differences for you?
it's a huge difference. It's a new system here, and especially for a woman. But, you know, I'm really appreciative of the U.S. government that offered me all the great opportunities being here in the state and having all the safety and peace. And it's a wonderful life here, especially having all the freedoms and having the peace and having safety here. I'm going to school without worries, and I'm very happy here. Like, I'm going to school with the peace of mind.
Zamsama Safi, former interpreter for coalition forces in Afghanistan, now living and apparently thriving in St. Peter's, Missouri, a suburb of St. Louis. Thank you so much, Zamsama, and good luck.
Thank you so much. It's been my pleasure to be here. Thank you.